I'd like to call to order this planning commission meeting on Tuesday, March 26, 2019. It is 7 p.m. We are in the Community Recreation Center. We will begin by having time for public comment. And we do have two people signed up for public comment, but I would like to preface this with, we're also having a review recommendation and public hearing on our proposed amendments to the City Code Title 10. If the comments are in relation to those, if you wish, you can defer until after the presentation for that and then have them be directly part of that. Would you prefer that?
Yeah.
Great, we can do that. If anybody else would like to make a public comment, you have 3 minutes if you'd like. You can come up to the microphone, make a statement.
Yeah, I'd like to be on too.
Okay. Yeah, for the public hearing?
Yes.
Hearing. Okay, we'll allow you time for that. If there's nobody else who'd like to make public comment, then we'll close that portion of our meeting and move to schedule item number 3, approval of minutes from the February 26th, 2019 Planning Commission meeting and the March 7th, 2019 Special Planning Commission meeting. Discussion. I'll entertain a motion.
I move that we approve the minutes from the March 7th. Special Planning Commission,
February 26th.
Planning
Commission.
Hmm?
Did you already recognize voting numbers?
I didn't. Do I have a second?
Second.
Great, okay. And in discussion, I need to point out that who's voting members tonight. We're recognizing all present as voting members, including Lorraine Kraft. Jared, you were in there, right? And Jared. Okay. All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Great. We'll move on to review recommendation and public hearing on amendments to City Code Title 10, Chapter 3 regarding rezoning parcel located approximately 39390 Timpanogos Cove from open space to the H1 Hillside Zone and to amend the official zone map to reflect these changes.
Okay. I'm going to give you some history on this piece. This is part of Canyon Heights, Flat G. It's everything that's on Canyon Heights subdivision is generally, not everything, but just about everything that's up high on the hillside on the east side of Canyon Road on that south subdivision. There are other subdivisions like Bonnie and Cottages and Renaissance, but all the homes that are high on the hill. So if you're familiar with where Timpanogos Cove Park is, it's the homes that are around that area. That's where we're going. In 2014, I want to say, maybe when your house was built? 13, yeah, okay. So we're dealing with this a few years ago, right? This isn't a recent thing. 2013, Mr. Miller built his home on lot 13 here. This is Timpanogos Cove Drive. Pointer. But this is what you're seeing is Timpanogos Cove Drive, and Mr. Miller built his home on lot 13. As part of that development, there were some, and the city owns this open space, non-buildable lot 14, which is right here. This at the time was city-owned property. During the construction phase of Mr. Miller's home, I don't believe he was the owner of it, but the construction encroached over as Cradle Homes home. And the construction built past the property line a ways and put some improvements in it. Mr. Miller purchased the home, and my understanding is that the city, he can't approach the city saying, I'd like to purchase this open space from the city. The city then worked out an agreement to sell that open space to him, and that was, title was transferred back in 2015, and so that's all water and bridge, so to speak, right? However, it is this piece of open space, a non-buildable lot 14 is an interesting piece, because this subdivision, if you've gone up there, let me show you a couple pictures I took today. This is This first one, this is just looking straight onto the property. You can see that from the home that you can see there on the left, that's Mr. Miller's home. And there's a flat little spot to the south of his home, and then it kind of drops off down. There's a retention, or there's a drainage swell there. And if you were to, I'll show you another picture, as you walk up and look west, down, this is up top of that hill, you can kind of see the, it's steep down as it goes down towards the road, and then there's a berm, and it goes down on the other side as well, and there's an inlet box that's just off to the side of this picture. Anyway, one more picture you can see standing in that retention basin. You can see that there is an active retention, not retention basin, sorry, it's really just a drainage swell, because it collects the hillside drainage and then kind of transfers it down into a retention basin that's a little bit further to the west. So let's look at this property here. So you can see that in this aerial image, you can see the improvements that have kind of been made. The natural property line is this line that comes through here, right? And the shadow cast, the home is casting a long shadow, but that's actually where the foundation of the home is. So let me just go through the actual problems with this property, or maybe really what the issues are. I'm just going to draw them up because I think it's the easiest way to understand what's happening here. Let me go back. Let me explain what we're actually being asked to do tonight. Mr. Miller would like to have that open space provision on that property be removed, right? Mr. Miller wishes to expand his home to the south a little bit, and in order to do so, that open space would have to be lifted. Now, let me add a couple. Add a caveat that's important. Is according to state law, a private individual cannot own open space. Okay? So the city, in retrospect, probably shouldn't have sold that land a few years ago when it did. But nonetheless, it's happened. It's in Mr. Miller's name. So there is a way to rectify this. As part of any development of open space to the city as part of their development, and that's usually 30% of the land, especially in the hillside where you have some natural areas that need to be preserved. This subdivision met all of, going through their files, I had a stack of files about 2 feet thick. Jenny and I went through those. The open space provision for this subdivision is met without using this, was met prior to this subdivision being subdivision plat, prior to plat G being recorded, the total open space dedication required for the entirety of Cedar Canyon subdivision was met. So by removing the open space on this, you're not putting the subdivision in violation of open space dedication requirements. Is that fair?
Why was it designated as non-buildable?
Because of the topography of it. It's got that drainage swell on it. Let me talk about that as well, because that's the next issue, is that as you look at this plat map, you can see this line back here. There's a line right here. Everything within this everything in this green area is all part of a power and light easement. So Rocky Mountain Power owns an easement there, right? And then everything within this is an easement with the aqueduct, Salt Lake and Sandy Aqueduct. And so that leaves why this is a non-buildable spot, because this is the lot. You can see how much of it is not encumbered in an easement, not very much. Right, and then you've got, when you start thinking about where that drainage swell is. So let me look at an actual aerial image of his home. So if you're gonna take this and say, okay, where are these easements? Well, the power and light easement comes down here, drops off. You can see the power lines actually very faintly right over that picture, but you can see those lines. So you have this, let me also draw the property line here. So this is where the property line is right now. So you have a power and light easement on the east side of the property. You also have the aqueduct easement, which comes up a bit like that. And I showed you the drainage swell, and that's through here. You can kind of see the drainage box right there. So Mr. Miller wants to remove the open space and remove the plot line or the plot boundary line, so we merge these into one plot, one parcel.
No effect.
Right. So that's where I'm getting at, is the only way to do this properly, because the city's not going to use this as open space in the sense that we're going to develop a park here or a trail here or anything here. No, the reason that this is open space is because there's a number of easements on it, right? So we can't vacate the power and lighting, so that one has to stay.
Kenny, you need to leave the door open.
Yeah, you'll leave it, sorry. The power and lighting easement, that's going to remain intact. The aqueduct easement as well will remain intact. What we're proposing as staff is that I don't really mind if the open space is lifted on this piece, but what would have to happen in order to ensure the preservation of the natural drainage swell there and the integrity of any future structure, what I'm proposing is, I'm going to follow my notes here. So this right here is Utah Power and Light. And this is the aqueduct right here. You have on this lot, you can kind of see it vaguely in this picture, but you have a natural ridge line right about there. And it drops off precipitously down into the drainage swell after that line. What I would propose is that in order for any structure to go, like, so if you were to remove the boundary line here, this would give him, so if you remove this boundary line, and this was the new boundary line down on this end. The problem is that if you look at your side setback, it's 12 feet. Well, we don't want him building his house into the aqueduct or into the drainage swell. So you have right here this green line right here. You have a natural ledge to, or natural edge to the grade where then it drops down into the drainage swell. What I propose is that Mr. Miller conduct or contract somebody to conduct a study to determine where the slough point would be so you have a structure in the line. So if on a hillside, so the good hillside that I can point out to you is if you go up our SR92 and you look kind of past the golf course and you see the homes up on the hillside there. Those homes are built in a way that there's a structure limit line determined by a geographical study that in the event of an earthquake, there will be some debris sloughing down the hillside. But they can determine that based on the slope of the hill and the height of the hill. And they can determine how far back it would be for a structure to be safe. So what I propose is that we then determine where structure limit line would be so that the Utah Power and Light easement is intact, the aqueduct easement is intact, and then as we talk about re-recording this, I would want to see a drainage easement given to the city on this piece with access. At that point then, you can build a home, know that it's not in any danger of encroaching on any easements you've protected, all the easements, not just the cities, but also the other utility companies that use this property, and also ensure that any future development doesn't compromise those easements in the event of an actual event. In the event of an actual earthquake. Sorry, it's kind of hard to see that light. Without sun shining on that.
All right, with that presentation, let's open up the public hearing section. So first on our list is Ann Tierney. Please, for the record, state your name, your address, and the time.
Okay. My name is Ann Tierney. I live at 9398 North Canyon Heights Drive. This is the only natural drainage in that area, and one of my concerns just looking at the property is that disrupting that soil and doing heavy excavation in that area would impact that drainage. You know, it's very obvious that the drainage does go down, so that I do think this is, you know, one solution is to make sure that none of that is disrupted. But because if you look at the mountain, this is the only natural drainage in that area. So if this is disrupted or there is a structure placed in the way of that, that will change, that all of that drainage will be routed to the properties around, and that's a huge concern for me. Making adjustments to that segment of the land would significantly change the other properties. The property is not situated in a manner that would allow for, I called the city and they said something about a pool or something like that, or that supporting structures, extended house or whatever, would be able to be installed. My dad's a general contractor. And so looking at this, I think, how in the world can they do that without significantly disrupting and damaging that? I would argue that the Millers did understand what the property was when they purchased it. They understood that there were limitations on it and that it was not intended for building. And that, like I said, you couldn't change this without changing the entire mountain above. Because looking at that, there is only one route that water is going to come. And so that's a huge concern for me. I agree with the drainage study. It would have to be a very detailed drainage study, because it would also damage their home if there were structures placed in that area. And we've seen the impact of what happens if people ignore those natural drainages in the past, right? When we saw the homes flooded and the landslide. So I would just plead that we make the best decision for the safety of the community and the property owners by reconsidering this and protecting that land as a natural drainage and making sure that nothing alters that, and making sure that, because making those changes to that property could potentially also reroute the path that's coming down, so that it could also require the city to resituate that drainage pond that's below that. The city knows that these are issues, and of course the aqueduct and the power are big impacts on that too. And bringing in heavy excavation equipment up on that kind of slope just to get up that driveway, they would have to probably, I don't know that heavy excavation equipment could even go up their driveway, so they would be having to go up the hillside to even get to the top of that property, if that makes sense. So that's one thing that isn't addressed here, is that how would you get the proper equipment up there to even build such a structure or make such improvements. So that's...
Where do you live in relation to that property?
So I live, and I don't know if there's, so I live...
Chandler, could you go back to the plat, maybe?
So across from their home is another drainage pond.
Hold on a second, let's see if we can get that. All right,
so zoom out. So there's another drainage pond that is right... so you see the BLM trail. Here's the drainage pond, right... well, you can kind of see it. It's like this brown smudge that's across the road, right? So we're just right behind that. You can see the three tiers. So here's a drainage pond here, and then here's our home in proximity to that. But like I said, making changes to this and making any impact to that drainage. I mean, you look up it, and it is just a watershed. Not to even mention natural wildlife. Trails, you know, there was to be an impact study, I think, drainage and natural wildlife trails, because you can see that there are wildlife impact on that too. So, but like I said, we're here, and then all of these homes could potentially be in danger if this drainage is not continued to route in the right direction. All of these homes, and even back in here, could be impacted by that. So.
All right, we also have Scott Tridman.
All right, I'm Scott Tridman, same house down below that other retention pond. So the first thing that I just want to address is that we've already discussed or heard that the previous owner, the developer of that property, made a mistake and went over their property line. The city made a mistake by selling some open space. Changing the zoning is just complicating the mistake. We don't fix a mistake by making a second mistake and having development have to go on top of the previous of this open space. The other thing that I look at is I moved here a couple of years ago, but before that I lived in Saratoga Springs. We had a neighborhood over there that was deemed as completely buildable, even though it was in a runoff area as well. A burn scar up above and a rainstorm that happened just at an inopportune time, and our whole neighborhood was out digging mud out of basements of all the neighbors. The point of that is that whenever we start looking at natural drainage issues and we start putting fill and things like that, eventually nature always wins. And if it gets approved, I'll be up digging out basements. I love all our neighbors. Nothing that we say or nothing that's going to happen here is going to change that. We'll definitely support all of our neighbors, but I know that nature always wins when we make changes to topography. We can't predict. If we design the drainage in there, it's usually designed off of typical drainage, not the drainage that happens during an emergency, which we know that we're going to have emergencies. There's always the what-if factor that comes with that. So those are the big issues that I have concern with, that natural drainage, not only, just walk up here, not only is it just that natural drainage area right through there, but if you look at all the homes that are built up along there, there's no other natural drainage for it. All that water is during emergencies, going to funnel down to that. And there's retention ponds all around that because the city identified that and designed to accommodate that runoff along with the houses being there and all those concerns. So I think my big concern is changing anything with that is going to impact how those drainage ponds were initially set up. It can have an impact on not only the houses immediately adjacent to it, but the entire neighborhood as it changes where the water's going to seep through and how stable that landslide is. A lot of those homes are built on steep inclines, so change in how things are going to run off could have an impact on many different homes foundationally, as well as just the catastrophic mudslides that you can see if we happen to have a burn scar up above and a rainstorm within that opportune time. So those are my big concerns, and just hope that the city can look at that and make sure that we don't complicate a mistake by making a second one on top. Thanks.
Is there anyone else who has not signed up like this?
My name is Nate Miller. I appreciate the Tier Links
and you
concerns. I live right where we are talking about.
Okay.
Can we go to that other picture of where the basketball court is? So when we built the house in 2013, we actually, this is all, we moved like 133 truckloads of dirt out of the space. And so up to the ravine, which we protected and we want to continue to protect, is the runoff and the ravine. But this was all virgin ground. We dug into the hill for this area. My only goal is to remove this property line so that my goal is to put it, enclose this basketball court. So we want to dig down, put a basketball court in, and put a deck on top of it. That's our goal. This is virgin ground. If I built it now, it would encroach, it would come out to the property line. Everything else from a drainage standpoint, we would be the same. Obviously, that is a drainage point, and we want to protect that. And my goal is to add an addition and put a deck on it on virgin ground. So I think it would be solid ground to begin with. But the way it's, if we don't lift this property line, it doesn't allow me to do that.
Okay, thank you. Was there anyone else? All right, we'll close the public hearing portion. Comments and questions?
Yes, I do have a question for Mr. Miller. Do we plan to have heavy excavation equipment go up there?
It actually would go up. We wouldn't do it the driveway. There would be And I need to talk to Chandler about there's a road that we could take, or we could go up the hill that we did when we built the house.
Exactly. There's an access on the backside. Because, like, I can address this, but you don't want to get there.
No.
So the aqueduct, they maintain their land here. They're pretty hardcore about the reason. If you've ever dealt with them, like, they don't even want trees, they want deck to project them, even a cantilever over the reason, right? They're pretty hardcore about it. But there are accesses that the aqueduct has developed. Up here you can see there's one to get behind the homes on Silver Lake Drive. You can see these trails back here, as well as behind Mr. Miller's property. This one's a little bit harder to get to, but it is still possible. So you have these, but there's some private property that we have to work out. You have to get access permission to any private property. This piece right here is owned by a private individual. So there are other options. I'm going to take a moment and just address some of those concerns that you guys brought up. I don't want to dismiss them, but I want to just talk about them more fully, if that's okay. The natural drainage, I wholeheartedly agree with Mrs. Jerling that whatever happens, the natural drainage has to be maintained. That is critical. This drainage system comes and starts up the hillside, up on this private property, and it really does collect everything off the mountainside, and it kind of winds its way into, you can see there's an inlet box right under my, right in the center of that picture there, and then it pops out and kind of makes its way into the city's storm drain system.
Underground
for just a moment, and then there's actually then a, it pops back out. You can see where it kind of comes back out.
Just below the BLM trail.
Just below the BLM trail right here. You can see that white box there? That is where it pops back out. And then it's just a natural kind of, it's a grass swell that's there. And then it fills into this retention basin. Then I believe there's also another inlet box right there. And it continues, it makes its way down into the city. We retain all of our stormwater, meaning that it stays in the city. But these are net, the way that there was up above Nate's house, there is a natural system. And then once you get to Miller's house, it becomes the city maintained system. Right? So I wholeheartedly agree with what she said, that it's important to protect this drainage system. That is the utmost importance.
The inlet, though, is on his property.
The inlet is. That's not uncommon to have easements or to have public infrastructure on private property. That's not uncommon. That is quite common. However, the comment, and Mr. Tierley's comment about a burn scar, I think is very, very apropos in that he is right that in the event that there is a fire on the hillside, we've been very fortunate over the last 6 to 8 years that there hasn't been anything major. We got real close last year, but it is a concern that once you have a burn scar and you have a wet season like our, if that fire that was on the hillside there was a major fire and burnt a larger area, and then we have a wet spring like we're having with a lot of snowpack that's going to be coming down, we would have issues. You saw that in Alpine, I think it was like 4 years ago, they had an issue with that. So that is an issue. With that being said, I think that there are ways to do this without encroaching on the easement in any way. And that's why I feel like it's really important to A, establish that there's actually a drainage easement. And that's why I want to, if I go back to, I've got too many tabs open, I apologize. But if I go back to the actual, the plat, we don't show a drainage easement on this plat right now. You have the aqueduct easement here, and you have the Utah Power and Light easement. The drainage easement is not even shown on it, even though the agreement, it's mentioned in the agreement. So it is documented, but it's not shown on the, not an easement. I think part of the problem, part of the issue would be, it would be nice to resolve this, to show a drainage easement and then to make sure that the city has access when it needs to. We may see a big back truck around the cities with a big hose that sucks out the storm drains to keep them clean so that in the event of stormwater runoff, water can work and actually go into those systems. So that's one issue. On pool, I've discussed a pool with Mr. Miller. Currently, our code does not allow for a pool to be located inside setback. You have to put it in the rear setback of the pool. And this site here on the south of his home would then be considered a site setback. You couldn't, under our current code, you could not put a pool there.
Even if the code was, even if this property were rezoned,
yeah.
So that could not allow for a pool.
No, a pool could not go on the south. The way our current code is written, you cannot put a pool on this on the side setback.
My only hope was to put a pool in the front, and
you didn't want to have one of those infinity pools in the front, which would be really cool. I guess my point is you can do many things with your lot, but you can't do everything with your lot. You know, and I'm sure all homeowners are living in a place where we have all these grand dreams of what we want to do, and then reality steps in. So a pool right now is, unless you can figure out a way to do it in the backyard, it couldn't happen on the side. Changing the zoning. This is, excuse me, this parcel's already in the H1 zone. So changing the zoning is maybe, it's the wrong way to speak of it. This is the open space provision is part of the zoning, and we're not changing the zone from the H1 zone to another zone. So it's staying in the same zone. Really, the zoning on the plat map, this right here would have to be replatted to show not that it's not open space and it's not a non-buildable lot. But what that goes back to my other point is in that. What you would need to do is establish structure limit lines to where the home, and I just drew some arbitrary lines for these, so don't take these to the bank. I am not an earth tech engineer. But what you want to do is that if you do allow for expansion of the home, let's say that the planning commission and city council are amenable to this proposal, it's like I said, it's not. In his zone, I believe the setback is like, what, 12 feet total, 24 combined, something like that. We obviously wouldn't let him build his home to within 12 feet of the new property line, because that goes against everything I just said about maintaining the integrity of that drainage system. However, you can limit the buildable envelope of that home by determining where the structure can go and cannot go beyond it. And that's why I think it's important that as part of maintaining the integrity of that drainage easement, there has to be some sort of study done on that slope to show what happens in the event of an earth slide, of a landslide, what happens in the event of an earthquake where that slope shifts. We don't want your home blocking the natural drainage easement there. Sophie on both sides.
So it'd be basically a covered basketball like kiddies? Is that what you're going
for? Yeah, so we would dig down, our goal is to dig down 10 feet, maybe half for a basketball court, and then the other 10 feet would be structured, and then it would line up with the grid of grass.
But if you're digging down and putting those foundational pieces in there and the impacting and everything, would that not impact the that drainage area?
I don't know that it would.
Because you'd have to
more
dig out quite a bit to be able to.
Right, we've already dug it out once, and part of the drainage we've already had to. We've spent a lot of money to get where it is today, so I don't think it would be an issue.
One thing you can do is, and we've done it before, where it's on the property owner's, it's their imperative to clean up the easement as well. And Mr. Miller's done a great job of that. I just walked up there today. But so if there were shifts in that slide and it blocked that drainage, we would have to immediately clean that up. It wouldn't be something that sat there. And then I doubt that would happen because that didn't happen during construction of this home, so I don't think that would happen now. Like I said, I'd want to study before.
Those are all questions for engineers.
Say it again?
Those are all questions for engineers.
Yeah, I'm not an engineer and I can't.
Well, not only just a drainage study, but also geographically speaking on that piece of land to see what it would look like.
Yeah, that's exactly what I would say. You've got to do it's called a geotech study.
Yeah.
And not necessarily.
My neighbor across Craig Clement used to do this.
Yes, okay. Okay, he was on the spot.
And we've done a geotech study already on the ground.
Okay. So we'll want to do that, but I think one thing that geotech study has not addressed is the slough points of that slope. So we know with the geotech study, we know what's made up of, what the dirt is made
like
of.
Like if that's all silt, and I mean, right now we're just talking about drainage, but we are also on a fault line. So we also have to consider
that. Well, we know where the fault lines are too.
Yeah,
so,
we do.
And we can go back into those subdivision files because none of the homes are built on the fault, directly on the fault line.
Right, but this drainage could be impacted. If there was an earthquake, it could be impacted by that as well.
Yeah, and that's why the study is imperative. So to this body, you've got, I think, a couple options. The status quo, it can't stay the status quo. It can't stay as open space. We have to do something about that. Now, you can do a couple of things. You can, like I've been talking about, removing the open space. I think that there's an avenue for that, depending on the comfort levels of this body and the city council. And I think the questions have to be answered for a final up or down vote on by the city council. I think as I've thought about this over the last week or two, this is kind of where I've landed, and I've just shared that information with you. But you can remove the open space and allow for the combination of those two parcels into one parcel and allow for an expanded building of the lower, provided that it takes into consideration the drainage easement and the concerns that brought up tonight. The second option is to buy the land back. And if I'm being honest, don't really want to. I guess there's a third option, just removing the open space and not allowing for the combination of the lots, which you can do that too. I think that there's an avenue here that allows for the problems communicated in a reasonable way.
Chairman, can I have a question?
Yes, please.
Is it possible, as an option, to remove the open space and stop there until we see the study? And then maybe table the
you could,
motion
until
we see something.
You could. I guess my hesitation there is that it doesn't actually accomplish anything one way or another. I'd rather just, it gets to the point, I see where you're going with it, it gets to the point of resolving the concern that the city has about open space being held in private land hands.
Right.
But there's nothing urgent about it. So
okay.
I would say that maybe you go the route of saying do this slope study. Show us how you're going to, show us where a building envelope would be, and then let's make a decision.
Right.
And we can look at the, I'm not sure where the test pits were for the original geotech study for the Cedar Canyon subdivision, for the Canyon Heights subdivision. I'd have to go pull those files. I might do that tomorrow afternoon. And I can see what, because if there's already a test pit located somewhere near that we can assume is relevant, we can look at that. But it still doesn't answer the question of what's going to happen to that slope in the event of an earthquake.
Or an unusual drainage.
Yeah.
It
may not even answer that question, right? Because The drainage system has a natural capacity, and, I mean, you could have Mr. Miller do nothing to the property, leave it as is, even sell it back to the city, but if there is a burn scar and a fire, or, sorry, if there's a burn scar and a heavy rainstorm and mud comes into that system, it doesn't matter what he's done, it's going to be an issue. See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because if that's going to, if that mud and debris is going to block the drainage system, it's going to do that regardless of whether there was a home expanded there or not. You just don't want the home to be the reason for it.
Which is an issue for the building permit.
Which is an issue for the
building. Not for this commission.
And the safety of their property, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's kind of where my questions were, sort of the scope of what we need to consider tonight. Whether it's a pool or a covered basketball court or something else, we'll go through the building department.
The engineering of the actual building is not something you or I would consider. That's beyond our...
What the use is, we'll have to comply with zoning requirements and so forth, so we're not here to dictate that tonight, if I understand it. Seems like our only concern is, we know that if we remove the open space requirement, which sounds like we probably need to fix something that was done wrong years ago, we know that that opens up some other doors that we're gonna, that are perceived as a problem. You've come up with a couple ideas on how to mitigate those perceived problems. So that's a question of, do we explore these mitigating ideas first and then get approval to remove the open space requirement, or do we remove the open space requirement with a condition, you know, recommend to City Council that they remove it on a condition, I don't know.
I think I might be coming at this from a little different angle.
Sure.
I mean, are we talking about amending the plat?
You're amending the two lots on the plat, yes.
And in return, couldn't the city require the easement to be on the amended?
Oh yeah, no. The easement is there. I mean, in the purchase document.
But it's not recorded.
It's not recorded. The understanding of the easement is there.
Ideally, the city would like to have recorded.
Ideally, you would like to have an easement shown on a plat. I mean, in a perfect world, I want to. If Mr. Miller no longer lives in that house, and we need to go clean a storm drain inlet, I want to be have something defensible to say, no, we have an easement, we have an access right to clean up this infrastructure.
Which will also ensure that the building doesn't encroach on the recorded easement. That can be part of the recorded easement.
True. So the recorded plat would be like plat G amended, would show two lots becoming one. It would show the current power and light easement, Rocky Mountain Power. It would show an aqueduct easement. It would show a storm drain easement for the city, as well as probably a note giving the city and all the other utility providers access to their easements, as well as a structure limit line.
Which would then allow Mr. Miller to make his application subject to all those zoning requirements.
Precisely.
And the recorded easements.
Precisely. That structure limit line, though, is determined from the geotech study showing what the slope failure is like.
So do we do that before or after, or where does that happen in the process? I like the direction you're going, it's right.
I mean, my goal is to keep the ravine drainage in place. My house is right next door, so I wouldn't want to mess with that anyway.
Yeah, that would jeopardize your
sure,
house
sure.
more than anybody.
Right, and because I own that property, my only goal is to stay on virgin ground and build a structure, not another residence, not to fill in the drainage, not to fill in anything like that. It's just to add an addition to my house that's enclosed with a deck on it. And so my goal is it would probably extend to where the cement ends already, which passes the property line. So I want to get rid of that property line, still keep the easements and not build on the easements, not mess with those easements, because that's part of, I've protected it already and I don't want water in my house either, right? And so my goal is just to combine the two, add an addition and enjoy it.
Yeah, I'm not opposed to any of that. the structural limit line comes into play if he, if and when he builds something. So does that become, does that have to become part of
the... I would want the structural limit line identified on the plat. On the plat. Let me show you. It's not uncommon.
Then do we need to establish that line for all the...
When you adopt the plat, you'd have to have that line established.
The rest of everything Jared said is the right way to go.
And the structural limit line can only be determined not by a geotech study, but by a different study.
Probably the geotech and sign up slow.
I think the geotech would include the drainage, wouldn't it?
A new geotech would. I don't think the original did.
Because let's keep in mind on the geotech, the test bits were mentioned before.
We can go look. I don't know
the slippage up on Morgan and elsewhere.
Well, it looks to me like when you're looking at the edge of that cement, that's too close to the drainage. Like just looking at the top of it, that would be.
Yeah, I don't know what would determine.
A risk to go all the way up to the edge of that cement.
Here's where I'm going. In the past, there's been a too high of a truss level on the pits that were dug years ago. They're way too far apart. The soil is not as homogeneous as was assumed. We've got slippage and so forth, as everybody in this community knows.
Yeah.
So if we're talking a geotech study, which I guess you're saying has already been done, what I've asked for
it's
in the past,
specific, though.
That's what I would ask for, is that if we're moving towards... In this direction, I recognize the fact that you actually have removed soil. We're not talking about digging through a bunch of fill,
right?
And that's helpful. But I would ask, there's a discussion point. The geotech needs to be specific to where we're talking about. And that it studies, obviously, both those things. You're right, in a normal report, they're going to look at multiple facets. They're going to look at your soil profile and give you recommendations.
No, I want it to be safe.
You do, and I get that. I don't think anybody.
Let me demonstrate what I'm speaking of now, what I'm looking for. This is, like I said, this is the slope over on the homes that overlook the golf course, hole 10, right? So, hole 10 is just where this white space is just above this, these flats. But these homes, each of these parcels, you can see that their property line goes clear back there. Right, but this entire portion of their lot with this crosshatch is not buildable. So we have these homes because they've identified that in the event of an earthquake, this slope is really steep and it's going to slough off down to the golf course, and we're going to have a mess down there. But these homes' foundations are outside of that structural norm. Right. In fact, we've had people tear out improvements that they've made because they encroached into that structural limit line. We don't consider a cement pad a structure in the city. Just about everything else you can do is a structure. So it's not uncommon. I can think of another one in Juniper Heights where there's also a structural limit line. So we're a community with steep slopes, but there are ways to preserve those slopes in ways that don't encroach on the safety or the safety of what's below or above. It is something that we're, I want to say we're cognizant of, but it's something that applies here. So with that, you have.
So do we take
this is your risk tolerance, I guess. Is do you table it and say come back with the geotech study showing the slope and maybe a preliminary plat map what this would look like? Or do you approve or deny it? Because you can deny it. Or you can approve it, saying conditioned upon the city council having a geotech report for the city council. Then you're saying you're trusting that gets done. If that's beyond your tolerance level, then I would say table it and let's revisit this in a month. If you can get a geotech study done in a month, I don't actually know that right now.
That was my next question. How quickly could that turn around?
The property owner paid for it.
Okay.
And with all the development, your property gets it.
So you're saying that the amended plat could reflect what you just demonstrated with the crosshatches?
Yes.
And then
you identify.
That's why you would want the study before the proposed plat.
Right. So you identify where the structure limit line is. And it doesn't have to be the same method. It can just be a structure limit line. It doesn't have to be a crosshatched area. Because within that crosshatched area are three other easements. And then it starts looking a little bit like mumbo jumbo about being able to tell what's what.
I think it would be prudent to have a proposed amended plat and show the new easement, show the geotechnical restrictions, if any, and then that's something that we could visually review and make an informed decision on.
I like that. That would be for something without conditions. That already got conditions.
I mean, the homeowner's got to do it anyways, Mr. Miller, so might as well just do it.
Do it on the front end. I think it's
because you don't want to have to tear down the structure.
Right. What's the
after that?
So what we would do is you and I would work, and we go probably in the next little while, dig through some of those on the subdivision files, finding some of those geotech reports, see what information the city already has, and find out what information we need to get from the geotech report. I know for a fact that one of the bits of information we're going to have from the new geotech report is a slope study on that northern slope of the drainage, showing in the event of an earthquake what happens to that slope, how far down does it slump, does it slump at all. I don't know what the slope percentage there is, but if it's fill material and it's greater than 2-1, it's probably going to slump. So with that, you want to find how far back onto your property it's going to slump and identify how far it is safe to build in the home.
So isn't the building lot that I initially bought a building lot? I mean, isn't that considered any buildable space already?
Can I make a quick comment?
Please.
I'm Nancy Hager. I don't want to get up.
If you're going to comment, you need to get up.
I've been in the oil and gas industry for 4 years, so I've been looking at these plots for a year.
The only
said Steve Weber, and my house is right next door to the park. And the only suggestion I would make is when you have this geotech do the survey, have it within mind with all the changes that it's got in mind to do to it, because 10 feet can change the geostructure. It's pretty close to that, you know. So that's the only recommendation I would make is when he does this.
The weight and the impact
of
the
construction. Yeah, you're going to dig down 10 feet, you're going to put in so much concrete and all that stuff. Just make sure that he includes that when he does that study. That's all.
I don't hear feedback.
Yeah.
I had just a quick question, clarification, because you keep talking about building a house or a home or a structure. So, and you said that, hey, can I buy a buildable lot? It's my understanding that was open space that he kind of extended anyways. My concern, I live a couple doors down from it, and I love the gym. But my concern is, are we talking about building a home?
Can you just say
no?
No.
But we're not talking about subdividing, building a home.
Let me be clear. This is not, we're not proposing to turn this into a buildable lot in terms of building, you're going to have a new neighbor. Its name wants to expand his home. So, it just expands his home, so you don't need anyone. No, we're not talking about putting a new home. That's outside of...
Fair bulletin. There's no way you could put a home in that.
Chad, let's just go back to the one that showed the lot line.
Yeah.
That one? No, the one that...
A little
darker, but I can see the point where the lot line goes. Can you darken that up?
Yeah, let me just erase everything else.
Okay.
The property line sits...
You can kind of see it.
There, yeah, from that point. Okay, so it is my understanding, it's an unusually shaped lot.
Absolutely.
Right now, from each of those lines you just drew, we'd have to go 12 feet north/northwest. And that would be the envelope.
Yes, if you look at his, I can show you his envelope right here.
That would be great. His
envelope is this right here.
Right.
Sorry, no.
No.
I screwed that up. See how easy it is to mess this up? There we go, right there.
Yeah.
So you're talking about expanding that.
Yeah, like that far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that looks like, because you've got that one point that goes out, mm-hmm. that's going to put a lot of limitations on how far he's going to be able to go to that slope. So,
yep.
like, when he talks about just going to the cement, that to me looks like that there's not enough easement there to even do that.
And I think that's to be determined.
Yeah. yeah.
I don't know the answer to that.
Additional questions? I'll entertain a motion. Go for it, Josh.
Oh, boy. So do we need to
I would just
not worry about this memo motion, just make
no,
something up.
I would say table it pending the results of the geotech study showing silt filters.
I think we would like to see the proposed amendment.
And proposed plat.
Yeah.
Two items.
So does that require a survey for the easement?
It may. We already have a legal description for the creation of the easement. It may.
If you have the legal description, though, you probably don't need a survey. So
that's why it depends on how useful the legal description is.
But I'd like to see that on the amended plat, because that's going to affect the building envelope. And I think that the recorded easement has to be specific that it is, you can't build on top of it.
Sorry, say that again. You can't build on top?
Right.
Correct. Yeah, well, and what? The easement?
Top of the earth. Yeah. And that's inferred, but sometimes.
It's inferred, but people choose to ignore that a lot, so. So we need slope stability with failure zone. We need, I'm just going to call it preliminary plat.
That shows the two existing easements and the addition of a third easement.
What am I missing?
I think that's it. So I think the motion becomes the table item subject to fulfillment of your list of items.
Subject to slope. Subject to a geotech study specifically on the slope stability of the easement and a preliminary plat showing descriptions of all easements for both lots.
Well, on the amendment, they become one lot, don't they?
Well, right now they're two lots, but they would become one lot now.
Which further assures you're not going to have a second building.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that's the motion.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion to table. I will entertain a motion.
Thanks, guys.
Sorry.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.